and welcome to National Treasure Minute. This is the podcast where we analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate the National Treasure movie 1 minute at a time. My name's Hugh, and my website is hughkeen.com.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we're going to be talking about Minute 7 of National Treasure. So, Minute 7 starts with the three guys, Riley, Ian, and Nicolas Cage and Ben Gates, all driving in their big snow, Tucker snow cats, I believe. And they're in the Arctic Circle and they're looking for something. And then it ends with them stopping their snow cats and, leaning out of the doors and looking at the snow. So, I guess we'll just start with our notes. Do you want me to go first? Or?
Sure.
So the first note I had was about the hula dancer on the dashboard, which I originally thought was on the dashboard, but then watching it later, realized that it was on Riley's laptop.
Wait, what?
It's on... So, like, if you look... You think it's on the dashboard because that's where the hula dancers usually are, but then watching it again... You see the hula dancer whenever you see his screen that's tracking where they're going, because that's on his laptop screen. That's not on the dashboard. Like, there's not a screen on the dashboard.
I didn't make that connection.
So that means Riley brought his own hula dancer and has it sitting on his laptop, which was really funny to me. So, yeah, that was my first thing. What did you have for your first thing?
Well, of course, I looked in the background, so I also looked into the hula girl and why they exist.
Okay.
And so they started becoming popular in the early 1900s. And then because tourism was becoming a bigger thing in Hawaii, and then they came to the States, or like, you know, mainland states or whatever, after World War II when all the soldiers were coming back and they wanted to remember Hawaii, I guess. And so the... I can't even call it an article because it's sort of not a great website. But the quote-unquote article that I was looking at was saying that the guys brought it back and they put it on their dashboard. And they thought it was enjoyable to look at. So, No. I mean, not surprised.
Yeah.
But that's sort of how it became a thing over here.
I see.
I don't like them, if I'm being honest.
You don't like the hula dancers?
No.
The one in this... The one that we saw wasn't a very, like, it didn't shake as much as I feel like they usually do.
Oh, also, they didn't shake at first at the very beginning. And then in the 1950s, they put a spring in, and that's when they started dancing. So they originally just stood still, I guess.
I see.
And they're really just there for, I don't know, to look at. But I guess they weren't made to be put in dashboard, probably.
That's interesting that they didn't originally bounce. Since that's how I imagine all of them nowadays. All right, cool. So the next thing I had was more of a technical filmmaking thing. I was wondering if they were actually, when they film this scene and they're talking inside of the vehicle, if they're actually driving the vehicle, or if there's some, maybe it's like they're just on a sound stage and the crew is like shaking. Like maybe they just built the top half of the vehicle and the interior and then just shook it and then, like, you know, edited the background in post and, like, didn't actually have the guys out there driving one of those. And then they just shot the footage of this things driving from the outside separately. Because if you look at the footage of them in this scene, all the camera shots of them in that vehicle come from outside the windshield. Like the windshield's in front of, like, in between us and the actors the whole time, and there's three different angles, which means there would have been, they either would have had to tape, like, three different expensive cameras on the hood of that thing, and then, like, let them just ride and record while it was driving, or they would have just had to make another version of it and shook it and had it be stationary. And then just had one camera and moved it. So I'm not sure how they did it, but I just was, I was wondering if they actually were driving or not.
I just assumed they weren't. Most of the time in movies, and especially, I don't know, things like Disney TV shows, where they do a really bad job of trying to pretend like they're actually driving a car when they're not. I thought this was actually believable the whole time. That's something I thought of.
Yeah.
It felt real the whole time.
Well, yeah, I didn't, that's why I'm still questioning whether it was real or not, because I think it was, like, they did it so well, I can't tell if they faked it or not. So, the next thing I had was when Riley talks about breaking a shoelace being a bad omen, which I'd never heard before. So, had you ever heard that superstition?
No, but I did look into it.
Okay. Tell me more.
Once again, I couldn't find any reliable places for it, but the one that I did find was talking about in the 17th and 18th century, shoelaces were sort of looked down upon. I guess they just weren't. Basically, they said if men wore shoes with laces, and they were more feminine, I guess, and
okay,
so they didn't want that.
I see.
And so then they sort of connected that with broken shoelaces then. But then they went on to talk about...
So it's a bad omen because it was sexist? Is that what you're telling me?
I don't know. I couldn't find I couldn't find a Wikipedia or anything like that that specifically told me this is what it means.
Yeah. Interesting.
But then I went and I looked at other ways that shoelaces are tied to superstitions. And so one of them was that... This is mostly for women, whenever they started wearing shoes with laces, that if they came undone at some point during the day, it means that your true love was thinking about you.
Hmm.
I don't know. There's some where it's talking about confirming a father's love is greater than a mother's love. If the right shoelace came undone, something good was being said about you. And if it was the left side, then something bad was being said about you.
Huh.
So... I don't know why people are thinking about shoelaces so much, but...
Yeah.
Apparently they are. Or they were.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd never heard it.
I know you really like superstitions, though. So.
Yeah, I love superstition. The next thing... Oh, yeah. So then following him saying that it's a bad omen, they joke about throwing Riley out and just, like, keep driving. So that way, I guess the bad omen isn't with them anymore. and Riley laughs, does one of those, like, fake laughs, which is funny. And then the important part about that interaction, though, to me was that... the filmmaker, the director, or the writer is doing a good job of making Ben and Ian seem like pals at the beginning of this movie, which might not continue. So I thought that was just an interesting touch. Did you have anything about that part? Okay. Then... Ben Gates says, "You aren't missing that windowless cubicle we, like, found you in, are you, Riley?" Something like that. I was very paraphrased, but that comment hits close to home to me right now because I am working in a windowless cubicle and would really like not to be there. So I think that's a comment that I would never have related to until, like, the past 5 months. So I guess that's just part of growing up, but it was just funny.
Yeah. I have two comments on that. One. So if somebody came to you right now, would you, and said that, I don't know what they said to him to get him to do this, but let's just say you want to go find treasure. Would you leave your windowless cubicle and go do it?
If somebody, I'm assuming the most realistic way it would happen is, like, they would say, we're going to go, like, we're going on a trip to the Arctic to find a ship, and we know that you can, like, you know technology and can help us, help us find the ship, so we're going to pay you you know, and we'll take you up there. And, you know, I'm sure I'd get promised some sort of, the like, reward if we did find it. So if they offered me more money than I'm going to make this year to just go up to the Arctic and find that ship and come back, I would do it. I don't know if Riley, I don't know if they were like, Riley, we're like, or like if Ben Gates was like, Riley, you're here until we find the treasure. You know, I don't know what the part of his contract was. I don't think I could make that commitment, but I think I would definitely like it, mostly just because we're married now. I wouldn't feel comfortable like making a commitment just to go anywhere until we find treasure. But if it was like, we're going to go up to the Arctic for a month, you know, for that much money for a month, you know, I would do it. Does that answer your question?
Sure.
Okay. You have anything else?
In general?
Yeah.
Yeah.
About this minute.
Yeah. So with it, with Riley's digital tracker thing, do you think that that's one of those things where people who actually use those in real life will watch it and go, no, that's not accurate, or yes, that is?
Yes.
Like how we watched that video of Caleb Dressel doing the swimming videos?
Yeah.
Wonder how accurate it actually is.
Well, I can guarantee you that whatever system he was using, like, realistically would not have, it, there would not have been a box that popped up and said, like, you are here, or, like, target, you know, Charlotte's, like, you are at the target.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's probably, especially since this was back in 2004, like, I mean, GPS wasn't anywhere near where it is now in terms of, like, display. So it's like nowadays your phone will tell you, you know, you've made it to where, like, you put in, you know, but, and it'll like explicitly say on your screen, it'll be like, you have arrived. But like that didn't exist back then. So I know that part's unrealistic. I don't know about like the actual graphics, like the quality of them, or like, you know, I don't know what that type of radar or whatever he would have been using actually looks like. But yeah, I was thinking about that too. You have anything else?
Yeah, I had one more, but did the last minute was the first time we talked about them being in the snow. Did I talk about their clothing at all?
I don't think we talked about their clothing.
Okay, so to all our dedicated listeners.
We talked about them wearing sunglasses or something.
Okay, well, to all our dedicated listeners who did listen to the last one, I don't remember what happened. And I wish we could say that's because we've been doing so much research on it. But that hasn't been the case. Anyway, so if I already talked about this, I'm sorry. But their heads need to be colder than what they are wearing. They don't even have like the two guys who talk last at this minute, they have hats on. But Ben and Ian and Riley get out acting like their faces and their heads would not be freezing
cold.
Riley
has a hat on.
You're right. Okay, it's just Ben and Ian.
Yeah.
But I feel like they should have face covers on. They should have all this equipment on. Those are just little things that don't really matter, but that really bug me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They spend jillions of dollars.
How are we supposed to see their faces
on the movie?
If
but they can't spend $5 on a hat.
Oh, my gosh. If they cover up their heads, then, like, the people who came to see Nicolas Cage's, like, head are going to be mad.
All they're going to see Cage his head fans. The rest of the movie.
It's about Hollywood, Sarah.
Truly, if somebody that was working on the movie had one, they could have brought in.
No.
Or like how runners will wear those things around their head for when it's cold out. They could have just used one of those.
No, what I'm telling you is they probably had hats for them, and they were like, realistically, they would be wearing hats because their head would be cold, but then they're like, you know, we'd prefer to just see their whole head on camera.
Well,
so we're
not
just
about
gonna
what they want.
Yes, it literally is.
They're supposed to be making the movie realistic.
No.
Yes, they are.
They're making entertainment. They're not making realism.
Well, then why do they have any coats on? Why do they wear
snowshoes?
Oh,
my gosh. Now you're just being ridiculous.
No.
Because
you need
if
to
they,
have all of the elements there. If you're
okay,
going to try,
if
you're going to have some of the elements, you need to have all of it. You can't go 50% and expect it to be okay.
They do this in movies all the time, so I don't know what to tell you.
I just don't get it. They should care more.
I don't know what to say.
They should care more.
They care about money and about entertainment. They don't care about... If they wanted to make a realistic film, they would just make a documentary. There's a chance they aren't even filming, you know, like, there's a chance they're on set somewhere filming those shots, anyways, of the guys.
That's what I'm assuming that they are. But that doesn't mean they can just wear whatever feels comfortable for this setting.
Okay,
the
I think we should move on.
Okay, well, that's all I had.
Okay.
That was my last one that I was most passionate about, apparently.
I can tell. All right, so now that we got all that out of the way, we're going to do our actor spotlight for the day.
Woohoo! We need a sound for that, too.
There is a sound.
Oh.
We say this every episode.
Oh.
There's already a sound. So.
It's been like 4 months.
You said the exact same thing
this.
Last time we
no.
did this.
Oh, well.
Okay, so today our actor is Justin Bartha. That's the guy who plays Riley Poole. You want to guess how old he is?
Now,
how old he is now?
He is now 44 years old.
He's 43.
No way, I almost said 43.
So
oh, man.
And he's been acting since 1998, which was the year we were born.
Whoop, whoop.
He got married in 2014 and has two kids with his wife. I like to, for these actor spotlights, I like to talk about the movies that the actors did before and after National Treasure, just to see what they were up to in that point in their career. And from what it looks like, Justin Bartha hadn't really done very many full, like, length feature films before National Treasure. He'd done a couple short films, and he'd done one other feature, as far as I could tell, and it's called Jiggly or Giggly. It's spelled G-I-G-L-I.
G-I-G-L-I.
Yeah.
I'd say Giggly.
Giggly. And it came out in 2003, which was the year before National Treasure. It was a comedy. I think it was a romantic comedy. Starring Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez. And it was sort of a big deal at the time because Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez were, like, romantically involved while they were making the movie. But it, turns out it's actually one of the worst films of all time.
According
to what it has been called.
According
to everyone.
Oh.
Rotten Tomato critics gave it a 6% and the audience gave it a 13%.
Wow.
And that audience 13% is based off of 25,000 ratings.
Wow.
That's how many people hate this movie. And it grossed $7.2 million, so that's how much it made, from a $75 million budget. They lost so much money on this movie.
So, what happens when you lose that much money on a movie?
Well, I also read that that was the last movie that that director ever directed. So, you sort of just don't get a job.
I see.
Most of the time, if depending on what movie, like what company makes it, like losing $67 million can just be made up by some other movie doing well that year. But if it's like the studio's only movie that year, obviously it's just going to probably bankrupt the studio. So he was in a really bad, he was in a historically bad feature film rom-com. Was the movie he did before National Treasure. And then after National Treasure, he did another rom-com, which is called Trust the Man.
Wait. You said at the time of that movie, Ben Affleck and J-Lo were together?
Yeah.
Aren't they together now?
They might be. I don't
because
know anything about
because she was
them.
With A-Rod, and they were going to get married, and I thought she was with Ben Affleck now. Maybe that's somebody
possibly.
Else.
I don't know.
I get
keep
them
up
all
with them.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so after National Treasure, I did Trust the Man, and it received a Rotten Tomatoes critics rating of 28% and an audience rating of 35%, and that's also off of 25,000 ratings. So it did fairly better, but it also had basically nobody famous in it from the names I could see. Other notable things in his career, he was in all the Hangover movies.
I've never seen any of them.
Neither have I. He seems like he's pretty good friends with Jesse Eisenberg, who is the curly-headed guy from Now You See Me, one of the magicians. Or the guy, main character from The Social Network.
Sorry.
You didn't hear any of that, did
no,
you?
No, but I was looking up to see if Ben Affleck and J-Lo are dating, and they are.
Okay.
Okay. What did you say?
I was saying it seems like he's good friends with Jesse Eisenberg, who is the actor who plays the curly-headed magician
Now
from
You
Now You See
Me.
Me.
I heard that part. What did you say after that?
You don't know the other movie that I listed.
Oh.
It's The Social Network, but you don't see it.
Oh, yeah. No.
So they seem like they're pretty good friends because they do a lot of projects together. He's got a movie coming out this year. Didn't write down what it was called. So he's still active. And yeah, that's all I got. So, I think that's all we have for this minute. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You stole my line.
This has been National Treasure Minute.
Thanks for listening.